Well, hello there. Welcome on to the RT Soccer Podcast. As ever, plenty to discuss this week in the company, as ever, of James O'Toole, also joined by Gary Rogers. But James, my man, how are you? What's your news?
I'm not too bad, Adrian. How are you keeping?
Not too bad. I guess every week I ask you, what's your news? And you never answer.
I know. It's kind of the thing like this. There is no news, Adrian.
No news. Gary Rogers, how are you? News. You've got plenty of news.
Well, I'm very good. Thanks very much. Yeah, I suppose a little bit of news this week. Started a new job, so really looking forward to that.
Yeah, tell us about it. You're going scouting.
Yeah, I'm going to be going scouting, so I'm going to be looking at players. Obviously, currently, the league is the only show in town in terms of games, so that's going to be up and running first. So I'll be looking at the players in our league first and foremost, and then you'd be hoping to look at the underage leagues when they get up and running. But yeah, be looking at football all over the country, and hopefully, keeping a good eye for some up and coming talent and trying to get them organised for moves across the water or wherever, whether it be England or Portugal or Spain, wherever it may be, to develop their talent. So that's the role I'd be looking to do.
Yeah, and we're not dealing with muck here. It's a pretty well-known international company, Gesti Futé. The company, founded and headed up by a very well-known agent in terms of football, Jorge Mendes. So tell us a little bit about the organisation itself.
Yeah, well, like you say, it's a pretty big organisation, and Jorge Mendes is the founder of it, and they're based in Portugal, but they have international base here. And they represent talent all over the world, and I suppose the most famous of that would be Ronaldo, and I suppose even on our own shores here we represent Matt Doherty as well, so there's plenty of big names associated with the organisation, and there's also a kind of commercial side, a marketing side, which is Polaris Sport, and they kind of look after all the marketing and that side of the football as well. So it's a really exciting opportunity to work with such a big company that represents so many big names all over the world, really. So it's really interesting, to be involved.
And Gary, was this an area of football that you were perhaps interested in going back for the last couple of years, the area of management and in terms of scouting and unearthing players, or did this come up out of the blue almost?
Yeah, well, it coincided with my retirement. The opportunity came up. I suppose it wasn't when I was playing, I wasn't actually looking really outside of that, and this opportunity come up, and obviously, my connections in the game, whether it be, through my teammates and former teammates who are doing various jobs in clubs, whether it be academies or managing clubs, and obviously I've experience from being the players' union for 10 years on the board of management and 5 as the chairman. So it's about, your connections and being able to, I suppose, tie in that with looking at the best young talent coming through. So it's something that was proposed to me, and it's something that I'm really interested in, and it's within football, which is what I know best. It's what I've done, I suppose, all my life, so it's certainly a very interesting opportunity for me.
And is there a particular area in terms of scouting? Is it youth football, or is it across all levels?
Yeah, look, it's across all levels, and for the time being it's going to be the League of Ireland, because it's going to be the first football up and running, and I know we're all looking forward to football starting up again. It will be across all levels, and you'll be looking under 15s, 17, 19s, the academies, and under 13 is coming on stream this year as well with the League of Ireland Academy. So you're going to be looking at all levels of football, but for right now the only strategy is to be looking at the younger players coming through in the League of Ireland. And I think, with the way football is at the minute, I think younger players are going to get good opportunities to play senior football in this country, I suppose, with financial constraints that are at clubs. I think that goes throughout the league. Everyone is suffering no matter what walk of life they're in at the minute, and it could be beneficial for the younger players in the league that, they will get the opportunity to showcase their talent.
And obviously there's so much talent in this country, but what do you say, Gary, to people who look at agents and, people who are scouting, but agents almost is a dirty word at times, because they kind of think, oh, they're only in it for their own good. How would you respond to that suggestion?
Yeah, well, look, there's always that suggestion. I'm going to be scouting and looking at players and trying to identify the best talent there is in this country and help them, to further their career and get the most out of their career. And I think the fact that I've been a player in the league for 20 years, and they'll be able to bounce I'll be able to help them with my experience of playing and playing at different levels, whether it be in the league or the national team or being in Europa League. So they'll be able to kind of, I suppose, come to me and get good advice from my own experience. And I'll be hoping to be able to pass that on. And that might be the difference between me and other scouts or agents, if you like.
Yeah, and I guess as well, because as we know, so many players fall through the net. Would you feel you have a responsibility for the lads, say, that maybe you might spot and say, this guy's got something, I would recommend him, but let's just say it doesn't work out for whatever reason, that will the company have a responsibility in player welfare if a player is struggling and can't quite make the grade and perhaps is feeling homesick? All of the details that go with those kind of situations where perhaps players are finding the going tough.
Absolutely. Look, you've got to tailor, I suppose, to each player's individual needs. Like, it may not be the case that players will go away now at 15, 16 to clubs. It certainly won't be the case in the UK, but you've got to tailor specifically to the player and you look at their characteristics. Does it suit them to stay in the League of Ireland and to play here and to gain experience that way? Or does it suit them to go to maybe an academy in Portugal or Spain or the Netherlands or whatever that may be? So you've got to really look at the individual and the characteristics of each player and take it on its merits and do what's best for your player in order for them to achieve, I suppose, the maximum out of their talent and their career. So it's, you know, it's very much on a case-by-case base. Like, we're not looking to kind of, you know, take on 20-30 players. It'll be more strategic than that, and it won't be a high volume of players. We'll be looking to develop maybe a small number and take it from there.
I suppose, Gary, with the fact that they're a Portuguese company, well, based mostly in Portugal, and the new Brexit rules about having to be 18 before you can go to the UK to sign for a club professionally, etc. And at the minute, there's a lot of agents here who specifically cater for that UK market. So it's kind of a new selling point for you guys. I think the last player that left Ireland to go there was Padraig Amond, was probably the last player to go from Ireland to Portugal. So it's or even straight from Ireland to somewhere in Europe. So it's a unique selling point for you guys, I think, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. And our network would be very strong all over Europe and indeed other countries as well. So, like, it is... it is, I suppose, a benefit, you know, to the company that, you know, it's so strong, you know, in the world rather than just the UK. And the thing of sending players over to the UK, you know, that route is probably closed down now until they're 18. But how many players have you seen that have gone over there and come back within a month or 6 months? And, you know, you need to be able to develop them that when they go, that they're ready for it and that they're able to compete and excel. So, you know, like I said, it's about tailoring it to the specific needs of each player. And that would be my intention. And we'll obviously look, see what the needs of each individual case is and try and do that.
Okay, well, listen, Gary, the very best of luck with the new job, as they say. Exciting times ahead for you, I'm sure. Also exciting times around Galway because they're gearing up for the brand new season. John Caulfield, the Galway United manager, joins us on the RTÉ Soccer podcast. John, how are things going? How are preparations for the new season ahead?
Yeah, things are going good enough. You know, it's obviously a difficult time and, you know, we're doing a lot of testing, trying to keep everyone within the group and within the bubble. But look, we've been back literally 3 weeks and it's been fantastic to be back. And there's a great buzz amongst the lads because they know how unique position they're in. And, you know, obviously with 10 new players, we're really trying to create a brand new team. So, you know, so far so good, but we haven't played any matches yet.
Yeah. You mentioned 10 new players, the likes of Conor Kearns has joined Ronan Manning from Athlone. And I guess the key one, or certainly many people look at the signing of Conor McCormack as a big, big signing by you for Galway United. What is so special about Conor McCormack? Why did you go in search of him in particular and sign him from Derry City?
Well, obviously I know Conor because I brought him to Cork and he was part of that double winning team, and he shows just not only on the pitch and off the pitch and around the place is just his leadership qualities and how so many players can look up to him and learn by the way he looks after himself and prepares for the games and conducts himself. And, you know, when you go into an environment where you're trying to bring in full-time training, you need people around that the younger players can look up to and understand what they need to do. And I suppose if you look at the age profile of our team, except for Shane Duggan, the majority of the squad, you know, are between 19 and 24. So, you know, I identified Conor as a guy who could come in and hopefully show that leadership to the lads. And, you know, his presence every day at the training ground, getting people to look up how he prepares and looks after himself. And that's invaluable. So really, you know, not only is he a great footballer, but you need an all-round character. And from that point of view, with the age profile of the squad, it was important to bring in someone I felt that, you know, they could see how it should be done, and hopefully they'll learn from that and take it on board and improve themselves as players, you know.
Yeah, is promotion a given? Is promotion that the target is that a given, that has to be the goal?
Well, I think, you know, it's a division where, you know, with obviously Shelburne and Cork City coming down, you know, two powerful clubs, and then you have, you know, UCD who are always thereabouts, and they're an exceptional team last year, and we're looking in the playoffs. And then you have, of course, Bray and Athlone and Cove, and you know, you look at every team have invested to try and get up, and you know, obviously the playoff scenario, the fact that second to fifth get into the playoffs, the 15 gets into the playoffs, you know, gives an opportunity, and once you get to the playoffs, it's knockout. So you know, every club has invested. So if you're asking me from a Galway point of view, are we intending to be at the top challenging? Well, obviously that's what we hope to do, but you know, Sport is funny. You can end up with injuries, you can end up with different scenarios, and particularly within a COVID year, you never know. But certainly from the outside, you know, is there an intention that we want to be competing at the top? Of course it is, but you know, no one is under any illusions how difficult and, you know, how tough it's going to be. But for us, it's about trying to get a team quickly together.
Yeah.
And gel them to see, can we be ready for the start of the season to try and hit the ground running?
Yeah, we could do with a bit of certainty, couldn't we, John, around the format and the, even down to the number of teams in the First Division, because as we record this on a Saturday evening, there's all kinds of rumours swirling around about possibly it being a 10-team Premier Division. There was talk of 12. What's your read on the situation as it stands on this Saturday evening?
Yeah, I think at this stage, I think obviously, you know, that I think 10 teams is probably what's going to happen, with Treaty getting in probably for Rovers B. You know, I suppose there's an argument that if it was to be a 12-team league, it might favour the First Division's then teams, because obviously you would imagine you'd get a second automatic promotion spot with a third team getting a playoff against the A team of the Premier Division. So, you know, that would probably have to happen if you introduced 12 teams. So that's probably not what Premier Division would want either, you know. So, but you know, at this stage, the fact it's gone so late, I'm still thinking that it'll be a 10-team division.
John, just looking at your friendlies, obviously kick off tomorrow with Finn Harps. You've set yourself a couple of really decent friendlies to test the lads you've brought in, with Finn Harps, Sligo, Longford, and Bowes as part of them as well. Like, so, it's going to get the lads tested quite quickly.
Well, it is, absolutely, and that's why you try to get those type of games. But to be honest with you, James, we couldn't get games against First Division teams, so you have no other option. but you know, yeah, it is. That's good for us, and you know, I suppose ultimately, in other years, you'd have games like where you might play local junior teams and games like that. But unfortunately, that's gone this year. So yeah, we're happy with it. We obviously have four Premier Division teams, but certainly for the first couple of games, it's really getting game time into fellas, and then maybe towards the last maybe two games, trying to go close to what you think is your starting team. You know, I think every club would prefer more than four pre-season games, but look, it's great to have it, because in the circumstances.
John, just a question for you. I've played down in Galway a while back now, but how have you found it down there? Because from my recollection, like, you have hurling, you have Gaelic football, and you have Connacht, and then you had Salthill Devon and Galway, the Galway District League, and Merivale. So how have you found it down there competing to get players, you know, to commit to Galway United?
Yeah, Gary, it's been, you know, good, and you're right, and you know it down here. It has changed. You know, I think that you know, there's been a lot more unity amongst the clubs. What I can see in the short term, I'm there, regarding soccer clubs. But still, throughout the city, what I've seen is, you know, tremendous soccer support, tremendous soccer in the city, and you know, tremendous interest in Galway United. But obviously, the club hasn't, you know, challenged for a long, long time. And when you're in the first division, you know, you tend to lose support and there isn't the same interest. But, you know, maybe with the short run that we had at the end of that last season, there seemed to be a lot of positive vibes. And, you know, but it's up to us, you know, for the start of this season, that see, can we continue with that? And I think it's no different from my previous experience in Cork. If you can get a winning team, it creates that positive environment around the city and county, and it gives you a lot more coverage. And, you know, so hopefully that will be the case. But you are right, Gary, in the sense that Connacht Rugby is strong. Certainly, you know, the Gaelic teams hurling and football are also strong. But it's like in any area, if your team is winning, you know, it gets the attention. And hopefully that's what we can do, you know. So, yeah, certainly it's a challenge to us. But, you know, it's a fantastic place to be. And, you know, I'm delighted to be here.
John, you took over last August and Galway were really struggling at the time, second from bottom of the First Division and in all kinds of trouble, really. And you ended up making the playoffs. Now, we know there was a degree of controversy around that. But were you surprised by how quickly you managed to get Galway moving in an upwards trajectory when you took over?
Yeah, well, I suppose, look, it's a bit like water under the bridge. You just come in and you just put the head down and you get going. And it was really about, at the time, looking forward to this season, putting structures in place. You know, it just took off and it was a bit of a roller coaster and it happened. And that can happen when you get momentum, you know. But for me, it was really about, you know, we dealt with that at the time. It was really about getting stuck in for the off season, getting plans in place and getting things ready for this season. Obviously, the change of training has changed the type of players we bring in, because a lot of the lads that had been there, you know, the Kearns, the Luddens, Flaherty's, a lot of these lads were, you know, Conor Barry's, all brilliant, brilliant guys, Jack Lynch, they all had to, you know, they were all in very good jobs and, you know, it was impossible for them to give up their jobs in the scenario where we're at in terms of a wage structure, and it would have made no logic. So they all had to, you know, leave the club because it didn't suit their work commitments. So, you know, it meant we focused a lot more on a lot of the students that we had and then bringing in a few professional players. So from that point of view, you know, this year it's going to be totally different because we're really going to have a new team. And well, the lads last year did fantastic for me when they came in. You know, it's just, you know, last season has gone, and since the last game of the season, I've been just concentrating on getting things in place and structures in place and everything like that for the new season. So, you know, if you look at the number of players that have come in and the players that we retained from last year, you know, you'll probably see that there'll be upwards of 7, 8, possibly 9 players in the team this year starting that may not have been there last year, you know?
Yeah. Very exciting game to start with, though. Shelburne, who've really strengthened in the close season as well. So that should be a tasty opener.
Yeah, obviously, because they're the big team there. You know, they came down at the Premier Division. You know, they've invested heavily and they've a huge project going on. You can see over the last 3 or 4 years, you know, they're trying to, off the field, they're getting, you know, great structures in place. They really want to bring the club back to where they used to be. And certainly, I'm sure getting relegated was not where they planned, but, you know, they've invested heavily again to go straight back up. And obviously with Alan Reynolds going in there with his experience, and, you know, he's been instrumental in bringing the likes of O'Connor and, you know, Michael O'Connor and Kevin O'Connor and these lads back into the club. So, you know, it's going to be a fantastic opening game for us. But I think the one thing I have learned from last year being in the First Division, you know, every game was very competitive. And I think when you look at, you know, your UCD, Braes, Cove, and obviously then Cork City, you know, I don't think anyone can take any game for granted. I think it's going to be an incredibly tough season and a really competitive season. But, you know, it's going to be very exciting for people that are following it.
You're talking about the Shelburne backfield, the structures of Shelburne there, John. For yourself as well, it's not just the playing side of Galway that you've put your own stamp on. You've also put your own stamp on your backroom staff as well. So that must be very positive for yourself.
Yeah, well, look, we're all League of Ireland lads and we all know how difficult in our game it is. And financially, we all know how difficult it is. And, you know, it's like great Gary there going into the agency work. And it's a tough environment to go into, Gary. And, you know, it's because, you know, every player is represented, and it's hard to, you know, get you know, it's about building your brand and building your name there. But in League of Ireland terms, we all know how difficult it is. You know, thankfully for us, we have good support from the Comer brothers. We've good local sponsorship. But it is difficult for all clubs without crowds. And you know, until such time as we get proper investment into our league, you know, it's always difficult to have a complete professional league where you're guaranteed players to get 52-week contracts, guaranteed to get paid, guaranteed to give them 2 and 3 year contracts. You know, that would be a dream for the whole lot of us. But, you know, we're still a long, long way from that. But certainly I think things have improved over the last probably 5 to 10 years in the sense that you don't seem to have your clubs in financial trouble as much as they may have been maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago. So, you know, which shows that clubs are running their, or that boards are running their clubs better. But it is difficult because a lot of clubs over here are run by supporters, they're run by volunteers. And ultimately, you know, you need more business people involved with clubs because they understand the business element and how to run. And, you know, while everyone looks at the first team and looks at first team costs, the running of in a club now at the moment with academies, women's teams, the costs are incredible. And, you know, a lot of times people don't understand that.
John, as you rightly say, the first division last year was brilliant, and I expect it to be, you know, as competitive again. You look at the teams that are there. Just for you to be competing, you know, at the top end of the first division, I know you'll want to be going up to the Premier Division. How important was it for you for the club to go full time?
Yeah, I suppose, Gary, it was the reason probably why, you know, I'm up here, because to be fair, the board are, you know, there's a good board in Galway. There's loads of enthusiasm. A lot of people with different business backgrounds, and you know, I think they've got frustrated because the team have been down for so long. And, you know, I think, you know, we have a very big sponsor in the Comers who are very good, and I don't think, you know, they like looking at us down in the first division. But, you know, the one thing about sports, there's no guarantees. But at the same time, for myself, you know, to be given the opportunity to come up and put full-time structures in place has been great. And obviously, my experience, you know, it's good because I've introduced a lot of stuff very quickly. Ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, we all know the Premier Division is where you need to be, because to have any chances to get into Europe, where it's an opportunity to bring real money into your club, you know, and we're a long way off from that at the moment. But at the moment, obviously, you know, we're trying to build a team that could be competitive, could be at the top this year, and certainly challenge for that automatic spot. That's what we're trying to do. But it is difficult. But, you know, I always said in this country, we should be able to have sustained full-time football. But, you know, that's easier said than done. And, you know, when there isn't strong investment from the top, when there isn't TV money, it is difficult. But that's the challenge ahead for us, to see can over the next number of years, we get to a stage where we can have full-time football, where players are guaranteed and managers are guaranteed, you know, if their contracts are for 2 years or 3 years, that they're honoured. And we don't have the scenario where, which we have had for years, where they're only 1 year contracts and they're short term. You know, we need to get beyond that, and hopefully that will happen, you know.
Well, listen, John, we wish you the very best of luck. Before you head off, James has a question, because James managed to come across the Galway United playlist for the opening pre-season match. And he wants to know, which song did you pick? Because there's a whole lot of songs up on Spotify now, John. Brewing Up a Storm inevitably has been picked by one of the players. So there's a load of songs. Curtis Mayfield, Move On Up, Mr. Brightside, The Killers. Did you have any input, John?
I think James knows me well enough to know now that I'm not getting involved with young fellas picking songs, you know. So maybe leave that with Gary. Gary can pick one and tell me what he wants me to play or get sorted. But no, I normally stay away from those things.
Yeah. You actually picked one, didn't you, Gary, for one of the matches, the Europa League matches at the Aviva, just after the passing of Maradona?
Yeah, I requested that they play the Life is Life one. You know, it goes with his warm-up. Da-da. His warm-up, you know, that infamous warm-up. It's like you just see how good he was. He was unbelievable. Didn't even bother tying his laces and playing around with the ball. It was marvellous to look at. And we played that song, was actually played for one of our warm-ups. I think it was the Rapid Vienna game, I think, in around that time.
Yeah. And did you do the whole strutting on the pitch of the Aviva yourself? Yeah. You know, did you your Maradona?
Did you not see the footage? It went viral.
Yeah. Okay. John, just finally, before we let you go, a concussion and the introduction of a ruling that will allow teams to make a couple of changes if a player is concussed. I guess, like any manager, you welcome this, do you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, it's a great decision. And because I think certainly, I think going back over the years, I think there's been many players that have been played on with concussion and probably didn't know they had it. And, you know, we have to have everything right nowadays. And yeah, certainly that's, you know, that's great. And I suppose what it does is that, you know, even when you have a clash of heads and with players nowadays, you know, sometimes, you know, you may not be sure and it just takes that element out of it that you just make the change straight away. And, you know, I think everyone would have to be in agreement with that, you know.
Yeah. Did you ever suffer concussion during a game in your playing days?
I'd say I suffered loads of times. Yeah. And maybe with some of the chances I missed, fellas are saying, yeah, that definitely happened, you know. But, you know, I remember getting knocks and, you know, but the game has moved on. It was a different era when we were there. You know, people didn't go far and falling on the ground, rolling all over the place. If you got an elbow into the face, you were supposed to, you know, stand up and take it. And if you're asking me, was there occasions when I got a knock and I might have been concussed, you know, off the top of my head, I can remember possibly one or two. But you know, it's only afterwards you realise we isolated for 10 or 14 days. And you weren't playing for the next 2 weeks. Certainly not. You were back in training a few days later, you know. So it was just a different time. And but look at that type of ruling is you know, we all agree with that. So you can't compare now to the game 20 or 30 years ago. It was just a different game at the time, you know. And and the new changes have been good, you know. So you know, that's what I think anyway, you know, because guys are looked after better, they're prepared better, and if there's any type of doubt at all, you just remove it, and that's what you need to do.
Gary, did you suffer concussion during your playing career?
Oh, I probably did. But just on that point, it's interesting because it does help the medical staff as well, because I think that's often forgotten about. You've got physios and doctors coming in and they're under pressure to make a decision straight away. And obviously a manager wants them to play and the player wants to play. So it gives them, allows them the time to make the correct decision too. And I even think back to a game where it was actually against Cork and Turner's Cross. And I know that Fergal Kern was the physio at the time and Conor Clifford was after getting hit by the ball in the face. And he was concussed, but Brian Kerr, I think on the TV at the time, was saying, "Oh, like Stephen won't be happy taking him off. He should just let him play on or something." He was critical about the physio, but the physio actually got the call right. But it was one of those things where it takes the pressure off, I suppose, the medical staff and allows them the opportunity to make the correct call. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting new introduction that will, you know, be seen and will be trialled initially for the course of this coming season. So listen, John, we wish you the very best of luck with the season ahead with Galway United. And I'm sure that opening night match will be hugely anticipated by all Galway supporters and indeed Shelburne fans as well. So good luck with the forthcoming season and thanks for chatting to us on the RT Soccer Podcast. That's John Caulfield, the Galway manager. Gary, just that was one of the stories of the week, the introduction of, you know, concussion substitutes. I guess the big story in football this week on an international scale was James McLean once again being very open, and indeed his wife on air here on RTE talking about the online abuse that James McLean has had to withstand over the years. It was hard to listen to, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's very difficult. And to be fair to James, like, you know, you have to give him great credit for the bravery that he's shown, I suppose, just throughout his career, because, you know, it would be very easy for James to kind of have worn a poppy and, you know, a lot of this stuff probably wouldn't have been an issue. But you've got to give him massive credit for sticking to his beliefs. I think so many players, you know, would go over to the UK and they do the same as everyone else. But James is very strong on what he believes in, and you've got to commend him for that. But having said that, the abuse and, you know, the stuff that has gone on, you know, it's very difficult, you know, for anybody. I think, you know, he's done remarkably well to deal with that. But like as he said himself, his kids are coming to an age now where, you know, they see and they understand what's going on, and it's very difficult, and you don't want to see that.
Yeah. James, I guess with James McLean, it's been going on for a few years now. So I think at this stage, a lot of people kind of felt, oh, it's water off a duck's back. It doesn't really get to him. But clearly his family has suffered as a result.
Yeah. And do you know what? I've been looking into this all week, really. And it seems to be a case of where it's massive news here in Ireland, but not so big across the water. Like the main soccer writers in the UK, from what I can see, haven't wrote anything about it. They seem to be, and the papers do have columnists here working for them, so their brother and sister papers seem to be just letting their columnists here write pieces about it more than their actual chief soccer writers in the UK. So that'll just tell you how much they fear a backlash themselves in the UK, in the press even. And that's like, to see what James has gone through practically since the 1st November he was in England playing for Sunderland. It has been shocking. It seems to have, people seem to think they can get away with it now. Whereas in previous years, it's a bit like what's happened in the US as well as what's happened in the UK. There was always a rumbling, there was an undercurrent there, but now it seems to be okay to be very forward with your rumbling and your undercurrent, and there seems to be absolutely nothing that can be done about it, and nobody's willing to step in, it be it social media companies or the people who should be looking at this, like the police and the police service in England and stuff like that. But it was very, very good to show, like even just in the last day or two, the British Legion to come out and support James with his stance about the poppy, which is what he seems to get most abused for, was very, very good. But I know James, I know Aaron, I know his family. He's a good guy who has his beliefs, and you're not going to stand on his beliefs, and he's right to have them.
And as James said there, Gary, a lot of this for in terms of James McLean stems from his, you know, his principal stand, as he would see it, not to wear a poppy. And then as a result, when he was playing matches up to a few years ago, fans wonder, remember the days when there were fans at games? Well, fans used to be booing him and every time he got the ball. And, you know, he ignored all of that. Now, this week was more about the online abuse that he and his family have had to endure. But it's been there for the last few years, particularly at English grounds when he was playing.
Yeah, it's been desperate. And to be fair to James, it just goes to show the strength of character that he is, that, you know, he's been able to deal with this, you know, since he's been over in the UK playing and has had to deal with it, which is more unfortunate, and how well he's done to kind of, I suppose, you know, keep a lid on it. But like, there comes a point too that, you know, you really got to out, you know, what's going on. And, you know, it's unacceptable really to kind of to have death threats and stuff like that. That's not acceptable. And there should be more, what James said there about the UK papers, there should be more attention brought to it. And I think, you know, in fairness, like it's, you know, James has done the right thing and put it out there that this is what he's having to deal with. And He needs obviously the help and support, and he's been obviously receiving that from a number of different quarters, but he's had to ask for it, which is the most disappointing thing. And but hopefully, look, this will cease and he'll be able to move on from it. But you know, he's been, look, his mental strength and his character has been brilliant to be able to deal with it and continue to play at a high level with that sort of abuse going on in the background.
Gary, more headaches for your old boss, Stephen Kenny. John Egan will miss the upcoming qualifiers next month against Serbia and the game to follow a few days later against Luxembourg. John Egan out for 8 weeks. Robbie Brady also likely to miss with an ankle injury. It's difficult for Stephen at the moment to try and plan, but losing Egan, who's been very much in form in a struggling Sheffield United team, is not the news he needed.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, Stephen is probably well used to setbacks at this stage. If it isn't COVID, it's something else. And now it's a big injury for him. The only thing is, you look at your Darragh Shea coming on and really making a breakthrough as well. So, Kieran Clark had been back in the team at Newcastle as well. So there is other players there to come in. But like you say, we don't have that many players playing week in, week out a Premier League team. So it's certainly a loss, and it's not one that he would have liked. But it's like anything, it provides an opportunity for somebody else to come in. And I think, you know, when it comes to international football, lads are raring to go and they want to play for their country. And, you know, Stephen will tap into that, and whoever comes in, he'll have them well tuned up to come in and do a good job.
Yeah, Dara O'Shea came off the bench for West Brom against Burnley at the weekend. But James, the loss of John Egan, and you just wonder about that central defensive partnership, because Shane Duffy has had to endure a pretty rocky time at Celtic in the last couple of months.
Yeah, it's like Shane Duffy's move, we all thought would be great. He'll get first team football and what he was missing at Brighton, but unfortunately just hasn't gone his way. I don't know whether it's a confidence issue with Shane, or I just don't know. It's just been a complete implosion at Celtic. As far as the John Egan thing, when I first heard this and heard it was a toe injury, I thought, you know what, this would just be a couple of weeks out and that'll be it. But then, as you said today, like, it's what, 6 weeks? An operation, dislocated toe. I was quite shocked as to how bad an injury it actually was, because when I first heard it, like, I know we stretched it off, but I thought it was just a minor toe injury and we'd get over it. But again, I'm thinking Stephen is absolutely pulling out his hair, because it's just one thing after another. But as you said, there's a couple of young players there that could come in and fill in that position. Hopefully they're fit and raring to go for these games.
Yeah, Gary, we've asked all the ex-Dundalk lads on the podcast about their thoughts on Stephen Kenny and the job he faces. I've no doubt about it, you would see Stephen well capable of turning all of this around. I mean, it's been a disappointing start. He hasn't really caught a break so far. But are you confident he can get a handle on all of this?
Yeah, I think so. Look, it's been difficult and there's been mitigating circumstances around, you know, all the results to date. But he'll be very obviously keen to get up and running now in March and get that first win. And I think that in itself will fill, you know, everybody with some confidence. But like Stephen, you know, he's been a remarkable manager and he has all the attributes to turn around, that's for sure. I think we've just got to give him a bit of time. I think football this year has been a very strange place, no matter what level you're playing at. So I think, you know, you've got to give him a break on it, and this qualifying campaign should be a fresh start and take it from there and see how it goes. But it there's no doubt about it. It has been very difficult, and there's been huge, I suppose, bumps in the road, and you know, they weren't down to managerial decisions. It was other stuff that you couldn't foresee. You know, so it has been difficult, but I don't think there's any better man to turn it around.
Yeah, James, as I mentioned earlier, we're recording this on Saturday evening at 6 o'clock. We're still waiting confirmation from the FAI as to the composition of the first division. But you've been looking at social media, and John referenced perhaps a 10-team division. So we'll have to see how it plays out officially. But what are you reading?
Well, the Examiner was under John Fallon there, just announced that it will be a 10-team league. And that it will be Treaty United who've been brought into it. So no Dublin County and no Shamrock Rovers seconds team or Shamrock Rovers 2, which then would mean that Treaty United will play Bray in the Carlisle grounds for their first ever game. And it looks like Bray are actually congratulating them as well. So that looks to be as if it's actually come out to the clubs themselves over the last couple of minutes.
Yeah.
So it looks like Treaty United are in.
And certainly John Caulfield seemed to be hinting in that direction a few moments ago as well, Gary. So it's perhaps looking like a 10-team Premier Division. We had Treaty United representative on the podcast just a couple of weeks ago in the shape of Tommy Barrett, the manager who had just been appointed, and he was hopeful that the club would get a licence. So we have to see how it plays out, but it certainly looks like it's going to be a 10-team First Division.
Yeah, it's a pity that it has to come down to such a late date. Now Tommy Barrett has to kind of get a team together, so you would like to see, you know, something that in place, that this isn't left till the last minute. Like, you know, Bray have been in pre-season for the last week or so, and you know they've been getting ready to play to be confirmed, you know, so it's difficult. So they'll be glad to eventually have a name of a team that they're going to be playing. So it's not ideal, but it's great that, you know, there is clear structure now in place, and it is a 10-team division, like you say. But you know, the case of you know, two teams not getting in and one team getting in, you know, 5 or 6 weeks out, it needs to be revisited, and you'd like to think that would be in place at an earlier date.
Yeah. Obviously, Gary, we hope to chat to you on the soccer podcast over the coming season, but a couple of weeks out from the start of the campaign, are you excited? And obviously, people will be looking once again to Shamrock Rovers, Dundalk and Bohemians. What do you reckon? What's your gut feeling? Could it be more open this season, or is it likely to be the same usual suspects as we've witnessed over the last couple of years? What do you think?
Yeah, well, it looks like, look, Shamrock Rovers look really well set up again this year. I think, you know, they've built on the team that they've had last year. Now, I know they've lost Jack and Aaron, but they've brought in Sean Gannon and Sean Hoare, and they kept the nucleus of their squad together. Bohemians have been building away nicely as well. And look, Dundalk, you just don't know, but with high turnover players, which hasn't been the norm for Dundalk over the last number of years, it's generally been two or three new players in, and now you're looking at, you know, maybe 10 players coming in. So it'll be interesting to see how that all gels together. So another team probably outside of that three that I'm kind of looking at the minute, that Sligo Rovers could be one that could come into it a little bit. Liam Buckley's been there for 2 years now, and they really did very well last year after the break from the mid-season. I won't say it was a mid-season break, but the restart to the league, I think they did well, and they're building nicely, and they've signed some good players like Greg Bulger, experienced players down there. And now that Liam has been there now for a couple of seasons, you'd like to see what they can produce this year. So it's going to be interesting. It's certainly, look, we'd be all glad to see football back, and it'll be interesting for me looking at it rather than playing it.
Yeah. Are you surprised, just, you know, with your Dundalk hat on for a moment, are you surprised at the level of change at Oriel Park, the amount of players who've left?
Yeah, I'm surprised at the strategy, to be fair. You know, you look at Sean Gannon and Sean Hoare, and, you know, going to Shamrock Rovers, and, you know, it just kind of baffles me that, you know, a number of players have been allowed to leave, you know, to go to the nearest rivals. And I don't know what the kind of the thought process is. You know, are they bringing young players through, or, you know, are they bringing players from Europe, or what? Like, to have a team that was on the verge of winning three trophies, say, two seasons ago, and then, you know, they won the cup last year, but to allow 9 or 10 players to go, and it seems to be all 1 year deal. So it's hard to see what the strategy is behind it, you know. So it will be interesting to see how it all comes together this year, you know, with them changes. And I know at the minute there's a good few injuries in the camp, so they're, you know, they were supposed to play Derry, I think, this weekend, and that game is off. So it'll be interesting to see. There is a couple of good players that they've signed. I know Miskogan is doing very well, the striker, Norwegian guy from Faroe Island. So it'll be interesting to see how they all fit together this year.
Yeah, and of course Peter Cherry going back as well, and an Albanian keeper in as well. So the goalkeeping position is, well, now that Gary Rogers is gone, it's open season there.
Yeah, well, and that in itself is interesting, the fact that Peter's come back. Like, Peter's a very experienced keeper, high-quality keeper who's been around the league for years. And then you've got Abibi who's come in, and then you're also hearing that there's a new goalkeeper coming in from the UK. So it's hard to know who's going to start, whereas you look at the other teams in the league and they're pretty much nailed on, like Alan Manis and Talbot and McGinty will play, and even, you know, Stevie O'Donnell signed a young goalkeeper from Liverpool, Jarosik. So you'd imagine that he will come in to play. Even though I know they have a good young goalkeeper coming through from the academy there as well, and Josh Keeley. But like, to have three goalkeepers there and not knowing which one is going to play, so that could be. Well, I know that there's another one on the way. I suppose it's been speculated. It's not done yet. So that in itself could cause a problem too. So it'll be interesting to see who the manager goes with there. And obviously I'll be keeping a close eye on that. But I think, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see Peter starting the season either. So it'll be an interesting one.
Do you think the Peter thing is a bit as a keeper and a coach, Gary? Do you think that's what they're kind of looking for Peter Cherry?
No, I think that they've brought in Graham Bias from Shamrock Rovers as a coach, and he's an A license holder. I would have done actually an A license with him. So they've brought in a goalkeeping coach. You know, Peter's coming in to play. That'd be his objective, I'm sure. But Abibi is in, Alessio Abibi, so he's in, and Peter's in, and now there's another one coming in. My worry would be, if you're bringing in another keeper from the UK on loan, well, are you promising him first team football, or who's going to start? So it's very much unknown as to who the number one is going to be. So I think, you know, with the goalkeeper, you need to kind of know who's going to be playing. And, you know, with a new squad, you'd like to see who they play together for pre-season, because I know that Stephen or Vinny over the years would have played that kind of back four, back five together to get them used to it. And with such a short pre-season this year, it's going to be important for them to gel quickly, because, you know, it's very important to have a good back four, a good back five in place, and get that continuity and going between them. That unit has to be good if you're going to be competing and trying to win a league.
Okay. All right. Listen, lads, we'll leave it there for this week. As ever, many thanks to James O'Toole and also to Gary Rogers for joining us on the RTÉ Soccer Podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.